This is 91.7 WVXU Cincinnati Edition. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. When people with dyslexia try to read or write, the letters and words just don't seem to make sense. They can have difficulty spelling or with grammar and reading comprehension. We're going to talk about dyslexia today and what help is available for those facing the challenge. Then later in the hour, we'll talk about what the Kentucky Auditor's Report means to the Cincinnati Northern Kentucky International Airport and the way it is governed. But first, joining me to talk about dyslexia, our program director at the Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center's Reading and Literacy Discovery Center, Dr. Zippy Horowitz-Krause, and scientific director of the Communication Sciences Research Center and Pediatric Neuroimaging Research Consortium at Children's Hospital, Dr. Scott Holland. Also joining us, clinical research fellow in general pediatrics at Children's, Dr. John Hutton. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or email us talk@wvxu.org. You also can find us on Facebook and Twitter. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Certainly glad to have everyone here today. We've all, most people anyway, have heard the term dyslexia many times. What they may not realize, though, is what it actually means. And we will start with you. And if you will tell us, Dr. Horowitz-Krause, what is dyslexia?
So according to the definition of the International Dyslexia Association from 2012, dyslexia is defined as inaccurate and influent reading despite the exposure to the appropriate literacy environment and despite remediate intervention along life.
Let's talk about that just in general terms, though, because how would you describe that to a parent if their child is having trouble? Maybe Dr. Holland will go to you. How do you describe that to a parent? What are we looking at?
Well, sort of following on what Zippy has said, we think of dyslexia as a reading problem that comes from a neurobiological root, as opposed to a literacy problem, which may be from environmental or poor educational practices. As far as what a parent might be looking for, there are a number of manifestations of reading difficulties and dyslexia, difficulty recognizing or writing letters, difficulty, obviously, reading out loud, I think those are really the main things that, you know, you would start to look for as a parent, exposing your child to books and letters.
Dr. Hutton, sorry, I've got all the names confused here. Dr. Hutton, tell us, what causes it? Do you have any idea where it comes from?
Well, as Dr. Hahn said, I mean, the more that I research the subject, the clearer it is that the root of dyslexia is in the brain. It's in how the, different neurons of the brain organize themselves and wire together. And actually, one very interesting thing about dyslexia is that have not evolved to be able to read. Basically, reading is a fairly new invention culturally. It's only 5,000 years old or so. Mm-hmm. So our brains really have to take existing circuits that are involved with language and vision and association and wire them together during early childhood in order for reading to be successful. And dyslexia is basically a short circuiting of that process somewhere along the way that leads to difficulty in kids.
And I would like to add that I think we don't really know what's the source for dyslexia. So the traditional literature is talking about phonological processes, which means the ability to process sounds and to match it to the graphemes, to the letters. This is not an intuitive ability. As John just said, our brain is not wired to do that. If you go back to evolution, there was no writing, right? There was no writing. People communicated because they were next to one another. And with the technology and people around the globe want to communicate, we invented, it's not me, but we invented writing, and we have to communicate. And it appears that some decent percent of the population cannot do that so intuitively. And I think that the education system kind of expect the child to do it intuitively, and some children just cannot. As to the source of it, as I said, some literature points at phonological processing disorders, so a problem to match the sound to the letter. There is a massive literature talking about orthographic problems, so the problem to recognize the word holistically without even having to decode each letter at a time. And massive literature again, and even more so in recent years, is talking about executive functions problems. So higher order problems, paying attention to the visual stimulation, to the letters, or problems with working memory, the problem to manipulate the letters and to match them into one word, or even a problem in speed of processing, problem to process fast and efficient what I see and to respond in an efficient time.
Now, I think there's some confusion as to some people think, well, that person's not working hard enough or they're not very smart. And really, that is not connected in any way with dyslexia. Is that true?
I would say it's not what we refer to as dyslexia. Dyslexia is really a label that we use for a refractory reading difficulty where, you know, attempts have been made to help the child learn to read and they're just not able to get it because of all of the reasons that Zippy has mentioned. She also mentioned the executive function route, and that's something that scientists are now very actively looking at. Unfortunately, it also makes it difficult sometimes to diagnose dyslexia as dyslexia because it may show up as something that looks very much like ADHD. It may show up as something that looks very much like a general learning disability or psychological problem. So there's a lot of co-occurrence of reading problems with some of those types of conditions.
Well, you said something there that interests me. You said that sometimes it's confused with a general learning disability, and I think people think dyslexia is a learning disability. Is it not?
It is a learning disability, but it's actually, according to new guidelines that psychologists are using to make diagnoses, it's now referred to as a specific reading impairment. And so reading and learning to read are certainly potentially a learning problem, but one of the ways that we diagnose dyslexia is we'll do a pretty comprehensive neuropsychological evaluation of the child. When there's a disconnect between their reading ability scores and their general intelligence and other measures, that's when we really define it as a specific reading impairment or dyslexia. So generally the child would have other normal neurocognitive intellectual abilities and just have the deficit in the area of reading.
So it's interesting to me then because obviously reading is writing things down and communicating that way, reading what's on a page. Does it ever occur with numbers? Can you have dyslexia and trying to read numbers?
Yeah, well, I guess, John, would you like to?
There's definitely our kids that have that's similar types of learning disabilities related to numeracy. And, that shows up within a spectrum. Dyscalculia. That shows up with a spectrum of all different kinds of skills that kids struggle with. But reading is probably the most common and the most well described, I would say.
And I think that there's an interesting statistics that talks about within the 7 to 8% of individuals with learning difficulties, almost 85% of them have a primary problems with reading specifically. So.
And is that always dyslexia?
Primarily. So dyslexia can be accompanied with other learning difficulties or ADHD.
But that does not necessarily have anything to do with how intelligent the person is. Is that correct?
No, not necessarily. There can be a disconnect between, for example, a Wechsler intelligence scale and the reading measures that we use. One of the things that we're attempting to do with the Reading and Literacy Discovery Center is to put evaluation processes in place that allow us to, first of all, define a reading problem in a child with a fairly efficient battery. And then beyond that, getting very specific about separating the reading difficulty from other potential confounds like attention problems, executive function problems, general intelligence problems. In order to do that, you go from a 45-minute evaluation for reading difficulties to something that takes more like 2.5 to 3 hours and involves also an evaluation by a psychologist, sometimes by a pediatrician, depending on what we think the co-occurring conditions may be. And in our center, we will do an initial 45-minute evaluation that will tell a parent that, their child does have a reading difficulty. With that 45-minute evaluation, we can't get as specific to say that this is not also, rooted in ADHD or some other sort of a problem. For that, we would make a referral on for additional evaluations.
We're talking about dyslexia today, and my guests are Program Director at the Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center's Reading and Literacy Discovery Center, Dr. Zizi Horowitz-Krauss, and Scientific Director of the Communication Sciences Research Center and Pediatric Neuroimaging Research Consortium at Children's Hospital, Dr. Scott Holland, also Clinical Research Fellow in General Pediatrics at Children's, Dr. John Hutton. And I'm going to have Dr. Horowitz-Krauss say her first name because I'm not getting it right.
It's Zippy.
Zippy.
Yes.
With a T in front of it. And I somehow haven't able to get my mouth in order to say it correctly. So we're going to have her say it as well. If you have a question about dyslexia, I would love to hear from you. We all would. And our phone number is 513-419-7100. You also can email questions to talk@WVXU.org. We're on Facebook at 91.7 WVXU and on Twitter at 91.7 WVXU. So do join the conversation if you have anything you'd like to add or that you would like to ask about today. You were going to add something there, Dr.
Yeah, Marian, you brought up a really interesting point, asking whether or not kids with dyslexia are have an intelligence problem. And I think that really underscores the value that our culture places on reading and how important reading really is within our society, that kids that struggle with reading are labeled as not being intelligent. And they're really very different issues. There's the whole concept of multiple intelligences. Kids are often, who struggle with reading are very creative and very artistically inclined or can be good at math or can be good at other things. It's really, the brain basis of dyslexia really is specific to the reading process and in general. And so I think that's one of the things we try to get across to kids clinically when they show up with problems in school and the behavior problems related to feeling, you know, discouraged in school, and they'll often act out and get in trouble. And a lot of these kids will show up in the clinic as having behavior issues. And it really comes down to that they're just not feeling, their intelligence is not being valued in the school setting specifically because of their struggles in that one category in reading.
What age does it first start to present itself? Is this something you're going to notice in a 4-year-old, a 5-year-old, a 3-year-old?
No, it's interesting that you bring that question up. Typically, the first thing that shows up is a speech or language problem. And, you know, mom or dad notice that their 3-year-old isn't talking at the same pace as their peers. And it turns out that about half of the children who will show up with a speech or language problem by the age of 3 will go on to have a reading difficulty later on. So it could show up as early as age 3, but typically where we see it present is in kindergarten, first grade, when they're getting their first formal exposure to the alphabet and, you know, classroom reading environment, which also kind of brings us to the interesting point that although dyslexia does have a neurobiological cause and underlying root, it's really viewed in our society as an education problem, not as a medical problem. And in fact, most insurance coverage for medical care doesn't cover it, treatment for dyslexia or even a diagnosis. It's usually referred back to the schools to deal with. And in fact, Cincinnati Public Schools has an extensive program for dealing with children who are having troubles learning to read. This has also been precipitated recently by the state of Ohio passing new legislation, which is referred to as the third grade reading guarantee. So we now have a law in Ohio where if a child is not able to pass a third grade reading proficiency test, they will be held back for the entire year of school. They'll repeat the third grade. Obviously, that puts a little bit of a burden on our public education system and private education as well. And so there's a lot of concern about that right now in Cincinnati and in the statewide educational arena. And we're really looking at trying to define what some of the medical causes for dyslexia are, to sort of recast it to some extent as a condition that the pediatrician can diagnose and pick up maybe even before they get to kindergarten. It's interesting that, you know, Dr. Hutton, who's sitting with us, is a pediatrician very involved with early childhood literacy. And I think you sometimes refer to promoting literacy in children as preventive medicine, right?
Absolutely. And it really is. It's, success in reading equates with success in so many other areas. Health literacy, kids that, families and kids that are better readers or value reading more in the home tend to have better health preventative behaviors, less likely to have, you know, school problems, less likely to end up with early, you know, teen pregnancy, drug use, and end up in prison, things like that. That's not to say that every kid that doesn't succeed in reading is going to head down that path, but it certainly raises the risk factors for all kinds of health-related issues.
Well, certainly there are some ways to help the people that have dyslexia. Can they eventually learn to read and find it not difficult, or will it be difficult for their whole lives?
So I think that absolutely they can read, they can learn. As you mentioned earlier, some of them are the most brilliant kids and the most brilliant individuals. So they can learn. We think in our center, our agenda is that each child should have its own individualized intervention. So yes, as a group, they're having a hard time to read. Some of them read accurate and very, very slow, which also impairs the reading comprehension process. And some of them just read very inaccurately, maybe fast. We think that the mechanisms underlying these different patterns are different in each child. And therefore, a child with more memory problems accompanying his reading problems should get a certain type of intervention. A child with more accuracy problems should have a different type of intervention, maybe more phonological based.
So it's very much an individualized treatment for every person that has it.
This is where we want to lead our center. This is what we think will be the best to do. Although I understand that this is very time consuming, especially for educational systems to do such a thing.
Our phone number is 513-419-7100. If you have a question or a comment, Elizabeth is calling from Reading. Hi, Elizabeth. What's your question? Elizabeth?
Hello.
Yes, go right ahead, please.
Hi, Marianne. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for calling.
Wonderful. I had a question for your guest. I'm doing research for an invention that might son created last year that helped him to improve his handwriting. And I was wondering if there are any programs out there that instruct handwriting from a biomechanics standpoint, because from what I understand, writing and reading are very directly related. So I was wondering if your guest had any comments on that.
Yes, do you have any thoughts?
First, thank you for your question. It's an excellent question. And yes, reading and writing goes together. The more you will, and actually some of, I think, Linda Mood Bell, which is a specific intervention, for reading, also works on the sensory motor aspect of drawing the letter and visualize the letter, thinking that it's going to stimulate different regions in the brain that eventually will result in a better reading. Since we are not working primarily on writing, I cannot recommend about specific program for writing, but I can definitely say that every program that involves several modalities and incorporate reading into the writing intervention may help.
Dr. Holland?
I could also comment. As Zippy has mentioned, there's a strong interaction between reading and writing, and there's a great deal of concern in the educational community, the scientific community right now, about the use of keyboards as a means of learning to write and of, writing during classroom time, because it removes the pencil from the hand and the writing mechanics as a component of encoding letters to sounds. The decoding process is really important for reading, being able to recognize that a certain sound is associated with a group of letters. And the motor activity of forming those letters by your hand actually complements the long-term memory of those letters and those word forms. And so we're still not really sure what impact learning to type from a keyboard as opposed to write by hand has, but those who are involved with it are pretty certain that it's not a great idea to do that exclusively.
Elizabeth, anything else you'd like to add?
I was just wondering if you think that having a early learning setting that teaches the fine motor aspect of handwriting as opposed to the look of the handwriting, do you think that would help to improve reading fluency?
I would think so. I mean, I'm thinking of Montessori, a lot of the Montessori curriculum that very early on the kids are taught to trace their sandpaper letters and involve the multisensorial sort of tactile, visual, and then phonologic aspects of letters first and letter sound, and that builds a strong foundation for decoding words later on, and then encoding, as Dr. Hahn said, as well with writing. So I think as many senses as you can get on board early on for the kids, reinforcing that same information, I think that it's going to really strengthen the learning process.
Elizabeth, thanks so much for your phone call. Dell is calling from Hyde Park. If you have a question or a comment, 513-419-7100. Hi, Dell. What's your question?
Hi. I had a quick comment. Earlier, one of your folks that you had on had mentioned something about, I guess, being able to counteract dyslexia by teaching the individual to read better or something of that nature. And I may have come in late to that comment, so I may not have fully understood it, but I am a dyslexic and I'm in my 40s and I have struggled my entire life. And reading for me is very, very painfully difficult. And without some, I guess, tricks or tips that I learned over the years, it would be next to impossible for me to do. You know, the thing that I discovered was the impact of color on the text or on the background of the text and how that impacts a dyslexic's, I guess, perception of the written word.
Are you able to read something that's printed on a colored paper better or worse than on white paper?
Well, for me, my color is green. So if the text or the paper are green, then it seems to act more like a filter for me to allow me to read it in the same fashion as any normal person would.
Comments, doctors?
Well, it's an interesting observation. I don't think I've heard it before. But you know, while we were waiting to come on the air in the lobby, John and Tippy and I were talking about the fact that reading from a screen versus reading from a book is different and doesn't have the same impact on a developing child. And part of the reason for that is that looking at a screen, and particularly the visual scan rates and so forth, actually interact with your visual system in a very different way than the book does. And so I would imagine that, you know, given some of the data that is now coming in terms of the adverse impact that screen reading and screen learning can have on encoding, long-term memory encoding and developing these abilities, the converse may also be true. Using some of the aspects, the neuroscience aspects of color and other types of visual stimuli to enhance your reading ability probably makes some kind of sense.
And I know, Scott, I just wanted to maybe to add from the neuroanatomical perspective, the region that in charge of processing colors is very close to the region that is in charge of processing words. You know, maybe in certain people, this interaction results in better reading or an easier word recognition. I think that the science is not there yet, but we're probably trying to get there.
So you're ahead of science there, Dan. Thanks so much for your call.
No, it was a study that I was part of in college, and they gave me different colored transparencies and had me read the same paragraph with the color transparency, and that's how I discovered it.
That's fascinating.
Oh, wow.
Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing your story. We really appreciate
sure.
it.
Excellent strategy.
Paul has called in and just asked us to ask his question. He said his son is in his 40s and is diagnosed with dyslexia. He couldn't take a driving test because of dyslexia, but was allowed to have it read to him. And now he's very successful. And he wants to know, are there opportunities for taking driving tests or other tests in general with a special option for dyslexics?
Oh, wow.
Do you know?
That's a great question, but I don't think that I'm not aware of any in particular.
It is true
that's
in school
like
that, that students with dyslexia can have things read to them, tests read to them.
Yes,
is that not?
Yes. If they're diagnosed with dyslexia, they have the accommodations of having been read to them individualized. Absolutely.
Definitely. And we didn't really have a chance to get into some of the details of remediation or ways of compensating for having reading difficulties in school, but there are a number of wonderful resources in Cincinnati and excellent schools mm-hmm. that utilize these methods. For example, the Springer School over in O'Brienville, they use the Kurzweil system, which is an auditory reading program that children can use, and it reads to them to kind of compensate for some of that. Cincinnati Public Schools has invested in the Orton-Gillingham program and trained now quite a number of reading specialists who have expertise in this particular method for spending focused time with children learning to read outside of the classroom. And there are also some other wonderful private foundations and institute in the Cincinnati area. A lot of that information will be on our website coming in January.
And you can find a link to all of that at WVXU.org, and we'll give you more details about that in just a moment. Susan's calling from Oxford. Hi, Susan. What's your question?
Hi. I want to know if it is a genetic thing. I'm one of six in my generation, and four of us have dyslexia. I have three children, and one of my children has dyslexia. I have three grandchildren who have it, and I have one great-grandchild at 3 years old, I think, has it.
Dr. Horowitz-Krauss?
Yes. Hello. Yes, dyslexia is a genetic disorder, and there are higher risks to have a child with dyslexia when you have a dyslexia.
And I suppose there's really nothing to prevent that. I mean, if both parents have it, is the chance greater than if just one parent has
Probably. I think we're still looking into it, and I think that there's several genes candidates that are pointed at risk to develop dyslexia. But again, research is going towards this because we want to identify early, and we want to not just identify, to provide the right intervention early in life. So we're definitely working on it. And actually, that's the next step of our research, right?
A single gene hasn't been identified, but as Sippy has mentioned, there are gene candidates that seem to be associated with a higher risk for dyslexia. It's still a very active area of research.
And a lot of this really underscores that part of the mission of the center, which is to really reinforce the concept of moving dyslexia out of a strictly educational problem issue towards a more medical issue, because we're talking all about neurons and genes and things that are very much in the medical realm. And I think part of the work we have to do to really make progress in providing services for a lot of kids that need them is better acceptance of this as a medical issue that does have very, very important health implications across the board. So,
Susan, thank you so much for calling. We appreciate it. Linda's calling from Indiana. Hi, Linda. What's your question?
I heard on the radio about a year ago, I believe it was a young man from Norway that had designed an alphabet that could help him, and it had some like distinctive print to it so that he could distinguish between a P and a D and so forth. And I didn't know if your panel had come across that in any of their research.
Are you familiar with that at all?
Your callers are coming up with some good ones. I
it stumped the panel today.
Just goes to show you shouldn't believe everything you hear on the radio.
So there's nothing that you're aware of?
No, not.
There are, when she was mentioning Norway, we have a colleague in Finland who's developed an outstanding intervention program that's aimed at the phonemic components, or the phonological awareness components of dyslexia. And it's a program that we're very interested in using here. Really focuses on learning the decoding strategy using a kind of a fun-to-play video game environment that kids are willing to spend time with. And we actually think that's probably a useful strategy at getting at some of these issues.
Linda, thanks so much for your call. We appreciate it. Tracy called and she wondered about special fonts. Are there particular fonts that are easier for people with dyslexia to read from than others?
I know that there's research about it. I know that larger font is better. There are several publications that came out this year, but larger font probably helps the children, to the individuals with dyslexia, to read the word holistically easier. I'm not sure about the differences between fonts like Arial versus something else.
I think it may also, we talked about Dell's issue with reading on a green background, and some of the specific types of reading disabilities that we encounter, whether they have an orthographic root, a phonological root. I imagine the fonts probably are more important for a child who's struggling to read because of a visual issue than maybe someone who's strictly got a phonological issue. Personally, I don't like serifs on my fonts, but that's another issue.
Michael's calling from Northside. You had some thoughts about fonts, Michael?
The earlier caller had mentioned an alphabet, but what I was familiar with hearing on VXU last year, there was a gentleman interviewed that had developed a font, being a dyslexic person himself, developed this font to eliminate or at least reduce the confusion between certain characters or letters just by the way that they were drawn or designed, and whether that makes a big difference. I looked it up myself. I Googled it and came across it, but not being dyslexic, it was just a curiosity find. But it is out there.
All right. Well, Michael, thank you so much for your call. And I think, you know, we could ordinarily go a whole hour with this. We're out of time already today. I think we've just scratched the surface, so we're going to have to invite you all back to have more to talk about. We do have a lot of information on our website and links to your programs there at WVXU.org. And I hope you're all willing to come back sometime. Thanks for being
Absolutely.
Here today.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
We've been talking about dyslexia. My guests today were program director at the Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center's Reading and Literacy Discovery Center, Dr. Zippy Horowitz-Kraus, and scientific director of the Communication Sciences Research Center and Pediatric Neuroimaging Research Consortium at Children's Hospital, Dr. Scott Holland. Also clinical research fellow in general pediatrics at Children's Hospital, Dr. John Hutton. In a moment, we'll take a look at Kentucky's auditor's report about the Cincinnati Northern Kentucky International Airport. This is Cincinnati Edition.